We are starting on page 2 of this booklet, and I actually folded it for everybody, and we're starting with Megillat Esther, Perek Aleph, Pasuk Yud. Okay, it's on page 2 of my booklet, and it starts with the words, Bayom HaShvi'i. Does everybody see that?
Yep.
All right. Now, I'm going to, full transparency. When we do the Gemara on this Pasuk, okay, I left part of it out on purpose because it's not the kind of Gemara that goes well in a mixed audience. And I'll give you a sense of why, okay, but I'm going to use not the language of the Gemara when I make that description. But I know you all well enough that all of you will agree that what I will tell you is good enough reason for not actually being explicit with the Gemara. Okay? So let's look at the first pasuk of the evening, which is Pasuk Yud. And it says, Bayom HaShvi'i, on the seventh day of this crazy drinking festival that was under Ahasuerus's control in the town of Shushan, Ketov Lev HaMelech B'Yayin, when the king was happy with wine. Let's put, let's call a spade a spade. He was inebriated. Okay? Amar, he said. Now here comes seven names. Okay? Lemuhuman, his name is Mahuman. Bizta, Charvona, right? We remember him well, right? Bigta, Va'avagta, Zetar, and Charkas. Ever wonder why you don't name your children these names? Okay? These are all Persian names. Shivat Hasarisim, the seven chamberlains. Okay? And by the way, I'm old enough to remember a guy named William Chamberlain. Remember, he was an actor? Must have been in his family. There must have been people serving some king at some point. But at any rate, the chamberlains, HaMashartim, that served, et Pnei HaMelech, okay, literally means the face of the king, Achashverosh, which means these were intimates of the king. So far, so good? Okay. Now, turn the paper over in the same booklet, and on the bottom of that booklet should be a number 3, and at top is Talmud Bavli. Now, the part that I left out is very much on the level that makes locker room humor among teenage boys look sophisticated. I did that one well, right, guys? I was thinking, how am I going to do this?
Should I ask the ones back there?
No, we don't want to embarrass anyone. Okay. Now, there's a really interesting thing that's going to come up, and we're going to see it in the Gemara. The Gemara is going to say, how does a Jewish meal start? And it's going to talk about brachot and divrei Torah, and how does a meal of this time start? It starts with tiflut. Now, what is tiflut? It means nonsense, right? Okay, but what it really means, for those of you who remember your Shakespeare, it means bawdiness. And bawdiness is another sophisticated way of saying vulgarity.
I'm sorry, where does it say tiflut?
In the Gemara.
Oh, okay.
All right. And we're going to... So, basically, I came up with a really interesting insight that I think is worth it. You have the word tefillot and the word tiflut. Tefillot and tiflut have the exact same letters. It's just that the yud, when it comes to tefillot, is after the pei, and when it comes to tiflut, it's before the pay. So what separates, okay, in essence, the Jewish meal from the kind of meal that's being described here? The position of the yud. Because what do we put front and center? Kutchabrichu, yud ke vav ke. So the yud comes, okay, the yud comes after the pay when it's talking about tefillot. But when it comes to tiflut, the yud is taking a different approach. And what it is, it's really bringing man down. So what do you see? You see the same letters can be arranged, and they mean entirely, entirely different things. With that in mind, let's see some of this inside. So it says in the Gemara, in Talmud Bavli Masechet Megillah, Daf Yud Bet Amud Bet, B'yom HaShvi'i, Kitov Lev HaMelech B'yayin, when the king's heart was joyous with wine. Okay? So the Gemara asks a wonderfully, excellently placed question. And the Gemara asks this, Atu ad hashta lo tav libe b'chamra. Are you going to tell me that until this day, this seventh day of his festivities, his heart was not, well, gay with drink? Okay, in the ancient use of that word. Okay, so you ready? Amar Rava. Rava, one of the great Talmudic heroes. Okay, Amar Rava. Rava said, Yom HaShvi'i Shabbataya. This was not just Yom, it says, B'Yom HaShvi'i. It wasn't just the seventh day of what? Of the drinking and the carousing, it was Yom HaShvi'i. Okay, Yom HaShvi'i, right? Vayichu HaShemayim Va'aretz. That's where you get the idea that it was Shabbat. So we're just starting now. You ready? She Yisrael Ochlin V'Shotin. And after all, as we all know, because you guys are the Neshei Chayil, you are usually involved in making these sumptuous meals, okay? And that's the day upon which Jews eat and we drink. But how do we eat and how do we drink? Marchilin b'divrei Torah u'b'divrei tishpachot. And think, how does Friday night start? With a lot of singing, right? Shalom Aleichem, Eshet Chayil, okay, of which everyone here certainly is well-deserving. Okay? That's how we start our meals. In other words, remember what I said before? We start with tefillot. We start with tefillot. You ready? Aval, and I'm just going to read the Gemara straight without being pejorative, but here's what this part of the Gemara says. Aval umot ha'olam, but the nations of the world, she'ochlin v'shotim, that eat and drink, ein matchilin, they do not begin, ela b'divrei tiflut, they begin with bawdiness and vulgarity. Their meal is, right? So basically, the famous question, do you eat to live or do you live to eat? So we eat to live. And eating is part of the overall construct of our social involvement with one another, and who is at every Jewish meal? Kutcher Brichu. Because we invite him in. We say brachot and so forth. Yes, go ahead.
If drinking was such a, you know, start of the whole thing, and
yep,
you know, why do we drink on Purim? Shouldn't we do just the opposite and not drink?
All right, now what I'm going to ask you to do is just to hold on to the question, because we'll miss the rest of the Gemara if I get onto that.
Friday night and Shabbos.
Okay,
no,
but we'll come to that. But just hold it. All right, is that fair?
Fair enough.
All right, let's continue the Gemara. V'chein besudato she'oto rasha. This is what happened at that meal of that evil individual. Now remember, who are we speaking about?
Achashverosh.
So we're not, Chazal never give Achashverosh a free pass. Because usually we erroneously say, who's the bad guy? Only Haman. But look how Achashverosh is consistently described. Okay? Hallelu Omrim. Now, you ready? Here's where we get into the locker room discussion. But this part is okay. I can read it with you. Hallelujah. Some of the drunkards who were at the meal said, Madiot na'ot. Well, the Median women, those who come from Media, they're more beautiful. V'halalu omrim. And others said, no, Parsiot na'ot. The Persian women are more beautiful. Now, they're really not discussing their ability to discuss current events and things like that, and deeply meaningful ideas. They're talking simply, and this part I can share with you, women as objects. And that's how women were treated in the ancient world. Okay? So, Amar Lehem Achashverosh. Okay? Achashverosh said, well, would you like, I'm going to clean it up a lot. Would you like me to prove to you that, you know, Persian women are more beautiful? So, Amru lo, okay? In. They said, sure. Well, Bilvad, and you already know this, Shitehe Aruma. So, Achashverosh says, you know what? I'm going to bring out Vashti. And they said, fine, but she has to be unclothed. Okay? Now, here we get into a very interesting idea. Okay? By the way, nudity, as you know, was something that the Greeks and the Romans, okay, thought nothing of. But remember, who was Vashti?
She was an actual royalty.
She was real royalty. She was a princess. A real princess. Okay? Now, why would it be the case that she was going to have to be brought out nude? I mean, obviously, she could have dressed in a lascivious manner that would have left little to the imagination. Why wouldn't that have been sufficient for Achashverosh? Okay? And by the way, you know, it's interesting. The world has not changed. Okay? Many times I go to Fox News, or I go to Yahoo, that's my portal for doing different things, right? So there was this movie star who took a picture of his wife, just the way Vashti was supposed to be. And he posted it publicly, okay, while she was sleeping, no less. Okay? Okay, now he's proud of the way his wife looks. Hamavdil ben kodesh lechol ben or lechol, right? Ben Yisrael amim. So you guys already get what I'm going to. So anyway, why in particular, though, did she have to be unclothed? Says the Gemara, shebemida she'adam moded ba modedin lo. Because the way a person treats others, he or she will ultimately be treated.
Did she used to make the Jewish maidens work on Shabbat naked?
That's the Gemara. It's not just a story. Let's look at it inside. Mula made. So from here you learn, Shehayata Vashti Harasha'a. She was not Tzidkaniot, right? She was not Tzedeket. Right, Malameh Chayeta Vashti Harasha, that the evil Vashti Mevi'a Benot Yisrael, she would forcibly bring the Jewish maidens Umafshitan, and she would forcibly remove their clothing till they were arumot, completely unclothed, Ve'oseh Behem Malacha B'Shabbat. So since she did that, she, which is kudos to Joan, who remembered that, okay, we're going to, right? Right? Well, no, because when would the biggest busha be?
On Shabbat. See, we learned that they had to work, but we didn't know
that.
Right. Well, it's like, you know, when my daughter went to Prospect Park, she was taught that one of the things that you may not do on Tisha B'Av is make your bed. Okay? So once she, you know, one Tisha B'Av, I made my bed, and she came and said, but you're not allowed to make your bed. Okay, because that's how she was taught. she didn't know the reality. Okay? So it's Lishnamalia. But at any rate, here you go. So how do you know that that was the case? Hainu dichtiv achar hadivarim ha'ela, after these things, it's a pasuk that's going to be coming, k'shoch chemat amelech, when the anger of the king, Achashverosh, began to dissipate, zachar et Vashti, he remembered Vashti, ve'et asher asta, and what she did. Okay, that's got a double entendre. Okay. Ve'et asher nigzar aleha, and what her punishment was. Okay, so says the Gemara, k'shem she'asata kach nigzar aleha. Just as she had forced others to be unclothed and to be in a public environment, so too did that happen to her as well. Okay? So, that's really what's going on in that pasuk of B'yom HaShvi'i Ketov Lev HaMelech B'yayin and so forth. Now,
and if Hassan doesn't give Ahasuerus a pass, why don't we boo him?
It's a good question. I guess if we were going to both boo Haman and Ahasuerus, the Megillah would probably take 4 hours and 25 minutes. Okay? Because we'd be so busy doing boo. Right? That's, I guess, a practical reason. All right. Now, guys, we're now on this sheet, which nobody had until this evening. Okay? This is the new source sheet for the night. So we are now on what I call Sipur Vashti Hamalka. So we have a really good on-ramp to understanding, the whole story of Vashti. Before we do that, besides the elephant in the room, which is Naomi's question, which we're not going to ignore, did anyone have any question on what we did so far as we're going into this? We're good? Chaya? All right. So let's go. Now, here we go. This is the very next pasuk. So what we had in Yud is that the king had spoken to all these seven geniuses that were his chamberlains, okay? And what had he told them to do? That's pasuk Yud Aleph, which is what we're up to now. Lahavi et Vashti, okay, to bring. That's very interesting how it's worded there. To bring et Vashti Hamalka. Now, notice, and I'm going to give you. Interesting. Good. See?
And that's on medication.
Okay, good. So,
some of that.
Rabbi Edelstein said to me once when he found out that it was teaching a woman shir, he said to me, David, you are so lucky. I said, why? Because women aren't afraid to give their suggestions. And their insights are often so good, okay, that they anticipate so much of what you're going to say. I said, yeah, you know, Mekom Olam Da Hiskalti, I learned so much from my students. I'm a very lucky man. So you're 100% on, but don't give the whole enchilada away yet, okay? We're going to see that in a minute. Now, what I want to point out to you in the first pasuk, and by the way, I only discovered this when I was really deeply going into this. Look at the appellation, okay? Not Appalachian Mountains, but appellation for Vashti. It's called Vashti Hamalka, okay? Go to pasuk, and you can underline that if you want. Go to pasuk Yudbet Hamalka Vashti. Okay? It changes suddenly. Now, go all the way down to Tetvav. Ba Malka Vashti. It changes again. Then Tet Zion, we return back to Vashti Hamalka. Yud Zion, it's also Vashti Hamalka. But by the time we get to Yud Chet, it's no longer Hamalka. Vashti Hamalka. What is it now?
It's Hamalka.
Hamalka, the queen. So, basically, you have Vashti Hamalka, Hamalka Vashti, Bamalka Vashti, and Also, you have Hamalka. So there's a
spiraling down.
Very good. Very good. So, for example, those of you who saw that excellent Netflix series, right? The Queen, right? So when she is being referred to as that the Queen can do this, the Queen can do that, that's when she's being controlled. When she's not being controlled, they'll actually use her first. Or they'll say Queen Elizabeth, right? They will. So there's something going on here. And I'm just feeding that toward you as we go through the psukim. Okay, so here we go. Lahavi et Vashti Amalka, to bring Vashti the queen, lifnei ha-melech, before the king, beketer malchut, in, right, with the crown of literally his kingship, or the kingship. Okay, and as you all know, at this point, what was the real request? With nothing besides that, laharot, to show ha'amim, to show the people. Which people, guys? We've gone over this a couple times.
Bad boys that he keeps times with. Keeps
correct.
Bad
right?
Company.
Or in French they say the parvenu, the lowest of the low, the hasarim, and the princes, local princes. Not the aristocrats of the aristocrats, but just the local guys. Et Yafya, her beauty, okay, ki tovat mar'eh hi, because she was truly beautiful. Okay? Now, what was the real reason? And let's be logical here. Okay, and as women, I think you're going to get this very quickly. What was the real reason he wanted to show her off in this way?
To show his power.
What?
To show his power.
Correct.
Get the other men jealous.
Right.
His power.
Power. He's showing off. He didn't care. He obviously didn't care about her as a human being. She was just an object. And she was no less an object than the clay mikdash that he was using, or the diamonds and rubies and everything else, and the beautiful cloths he had on display.
Women were treated in general in those days.
Absolutely, but not Jewish women. Not Jewish women. And that's very crucial, okay? That's very important to realize. Jewish women had rights going all the way back to the Imaot. These women did not. In fact, I did a little research. It seems, and this fits in very well with a pasuk that's going to come up later on, after Vashti refuses to come in her crown alone. Okay, we'll see why she does that. But it seems that this was not unusual at all. It seems men of this time, okay, would expect their wives to not necessarily dance without clothing, but they expected them to dance.
Entertain
everybody that was there. And obviously, they didn't invent belly dancing yesterday. Okay? So, the first thing to focus on, okay, here is Lahavi et Vashti. Okay? Lahavi et Vashti. So, Vashti was to be brought.
Well, it kind of reminds me like when Esther needed permission to go to Ahasuerus when she wanted an audience. You don't just go to the king. You have to be invited.
Right. But this is not invited. It doesn't say Lizamein et Vashti Amalka. Invite her. Give her a zimun. Give her an invitation. It doesn't say that. It says, bring her. Okay, well, we're going to get into this. All right, so anyway, what happens is in Pasuk Yud Bet, which is the next Pasuk, V'timain Hamalka Vashti. Okay, the queen Vashti refused. Now, this is very interesting. First Pasuk, and I already prepared you guys for this. First Pasuk, Vashti Hamalka. Okay, so the emphasis there is on Vashti, who happens to be the queen. But really, okay, being objective, she's the object. Mm-hmm. That's all she is to Ahasuerus. But notice the nuance of language. V'tme'ein hamalka. That's right. Because she was real royalty. And she refused. She refused. Okay? She refused. Now, she didn't refuse because she had a problem with appearing clothless, okay, unclothed, in public. We learned that the last year. She was just as low life in terms of our perceptions of morality as the king. That wasn't the problem. What was the real problem? Let's go slowly. Rahi v'tame'ein amalka vashti lavo bidvar hamelech asher biyad hasarisim. She refused, so the queen Vashti refused to come based upon the statement of the king that was delivered by the chamberlains. Because
he didn't invite her. He sent a messenger to invite her.
Mm-hmm. Good.
But to bring her.
Great. To bring her.
Yeah.
And that's like exactly... Okay, so ready? Between your daughter and you guys are doing amazing. Because guess who says... Guess who says exactly what you said? My Rebbe... Harav Soloveitchik Zechut Sadek Livracha.
Are you saying that she didn't get the pimples in the tail and all that, and that's a thing that we learned in Bais Yaakov?
There's, okay.
That was also his wearing pimples and green skin.
There is a medrash, okay, that's brought in the Gemara, okay, that Rav Soloveitchik does not discuss, okay, but rather goes exactly along the lines that we just heard a moment ago, that the reason why she didn't come is it was beneath her dignity. It wasn't beneath her dignity to appear unclothed in public. And if you don't believe me, just look at anything going on the red carpet at any time, and the various whoops that go on every single day, right?
Mother needs her tuition back.
Excuse me. Okay. So, but... Yes, she did indeed, according to one of the Midrashim, grow a tail. But that's not the real reason why she didn't come. She didn't come because she wasn't invited by the king. She, you know, you got these low-level, you know, people as far as she was concerned. Okay? That's why. She was miffed. So she didn't come. That's what Rav Soloveitchik says. And yes, if you want to go over the Medrash and talk about a tail and tzarat and green skin and all that, and that makes you feel better, that's fine. That's a good approach too. But it seems dealing with the real politic of the moment is this. Okay? All right. Now, of course, being that Ahasuerus was, you know, talk about a male ego on the negative end of things. Talk about a guy who was vulnerable, who was narcissistic, who was... I mean, all the things that you knew to run away from in a spouse, that's Ahasuerus. That's who he was. He was a no-goodnik at all. So instead of possibly thinking that, oops, I made a mistake, I'll make it up to her. Okay, I'll get her a ring that's 12 times bigger than Ivanka's. Okay, I'll do something really special for her. No. What did he do, like any low-life lout who grew up in a stable? V'yiksof, right? V'yiksof, excuse me. V'yiksof ha-melech ma'od. He became furious. V'chamato, right? Bi'arabo. And his anger burned within him. It wasn't enough that he got angry, that he got furious, but it burned. He couldn't get rid of it.
Heartburn,
huh? Okay?
Well, Kim Pai didn't realize that she didn't come. That's when she didn't come because he didn't invite her. He didn't realize that.
Well, let me ask you something. Do you have to invite a horse? Do you have to invite a chalice, a richly engraved chalice with diamonds and rubies? No, it's an object. So he didn't think of her as a person. He thought of her as a conquest, as an object. So therefore, just bring her, guys. You understand? We're not talking about somebody. I mean, we're talking about a guy who's like 50 degrees below, okay, sensitive. Okay, he can't even get to zero in his lifetime. Okay, that's what we're talking about. So he to put it another way that is very good in the 20th and 21st century, talk about a guy who was clueless. He was clueless. So all he does, he's only thinking of what?
Himself. Unless he did it with Dafka also, because she was royalty and maybe he was defensive about that,
jealous.
Right?
100%. Sure. Because he knew she was the real thing and he was an usurper.
Did they have kids together?
I don't think so. I really don't think so. I never heard of them having had children. Okay? Now, you ready? Here we come to the Torah Tumimah. Now, the Torah Pimina was Rav Baruch HaLevi Epstein, lived in 1860 to 1941. He was a Litvak's Litvak. His father was the Aruch HaShulchan. You've all heard of that. All right? So he came from a great line, and he goes all the way back in his family line to Volozhin, and there is some kind of relationship between the Epsteins and the Soloveitchiks. I apologize, I just don't remember the genealogy that well. Okay, so he has an interesting point, okay? The point here is, while everybody in the world knows that she was going to be brought to this dinner unclothed, he has a problem. Now listen, look at what he says. Amnan, however, lo nitba'er, it's not explained. Eifo merumaz inyan ze bepasuk. There's nowhere it says in the pasuk, right, that she was going to be brought unclothed to the dinner. Okay, and if that's the case, you know, quote unquote, you can't just make this stuff up. So where did Chazal get this idea? Okay, so he says this. Afki amnan halashon besamuch, but it does come up very soon. B'devar hamelech asher biyad hasirisim, regarding the matter of the king that was in the hands of the chamberlains. Okay, so here's what he says. There's a hint to more. It comes to teach us shehayata biyadam, that they had in their hands Azip kuda, some kind of command from the king. V'lo nitfar shah, but it's not explained in the text itself. Why? Mimnei hakavod. Because it would be embarrassing. After all, guys, this is Kitvei Kodesh. This is Kitvei HaKodesh. This is holy. This is part of Tanakh. So you don't want to put words in there that would be embarrassing to someone. And then he says, just like, okay, I'm sorry, your first name one more time, I apologize.
Eva.
Eva?
No, Eva.
Lillian. Sorry?
Lillian.
Lillian. Okay, just like Lillian said, I apologize, Lillian. Please do not be insulted.
Not insulted at all.
Okay, and this is what Lillian said, just like the Torah Tumimah. V'ulai samchuze, and maybe, says the Torah Tumimah, Chazal realized that it must be that since it says lahaviet Vashti, to bring Vashti, maybe they based it on halashon sha'amar lahaviet Vashti. So Lillian, if you didn't buy a ticket for the, you know, the various contests out there, the lotteries, this is your night. Okay. Ki halashon lahavi, because the language of the expression of lahavi, hu lashon gas lefi erech kavod amalcha. It was the language of arrogance before the respect and the status of the queen. In other words, the very words mean something. You've all heard me say that a million times. Okay? And if it says lahavi ed vashti amalcha, it means it's really going to be against her will. V'hu moreh lahaviyah b'derech pechitut univul, And actually, when it comes to the queen, it means to bring her in a way that's below her status, and it's thoroughly embarrassing.
Busha.
Mm-hmm. What's a bigger busha? Okay, then, of course, if she chose to appear in public unclothed, that's one thing. But to forcibly make her to come, as she did to the Jewish women on Shabbat, that's an embarrassment. Okay? And if she would have been involved on her own, Havalei LeMeimar, it should have said, Shetavol. In other words, the chamberlains would have gone and said to her, Bavakasha, Hamalka, okay? You know, Birutson Neich, Bavakasha, Tavol, you know, and so forth. But it's not what the Megillah says. It says, Lahavi. All right, so there we go. Here's now, we're coming to bring it home. V'lechein darshu. Therefore, Chazal learned by the way of a drasha, shetziva lahavia aruma, that it must be that which was biyada sarisim, that which was in the hands of the chamberlains, was a command by the king, lahavia aruma, to forcibly make her appear unclothed. Va'az bevadai lo toveh lelechet miritzona. And certainly she didn't want to come under those conditions on her own. V'lechein tziva lahavia. Therefore the king, anticipating that, commanded it. And after all, as Naomi said, I think it was, it's power. It's all about power. Okay? And obviously, I'm only going to throw this idea out there. I'm not going to be very explicit. All this, of course, is a metaphor for a variety of different kinds of force, okay, that probably obtained between Ahasuerus and Vashti. Okay?
Wasn't she also having her own party at the same time?
She was.
She didn't want to leave.
She was. And I'm sure she didn't want to leave the party. She's probably having a blast.
So then she probably didn't have the pimples because she wouldn't have gone to the party with the pimples.
The Medrash is really getting under your skin.
It's really good at your job.
Okay.
Don't break out.
Okay.
Don't break it out, Naomi.
I can't change my curriculum, so shush.
Okay. Yeah, she can't change that. All right. Next. Here we go. Esther Perek Aleph Yud Gimel. You ready? Now, I happen to have an original Chiddush on this particular Pasuk that I developed years ago when I was in Eretz Yisrael. I won't tell you how long ago, but it was a long time ago. And I've never seen anyone say it, so that means this. If you like it, good. If you don't like it, you will not hurt my feelings. Okay? I may not be that tall, but I have big shoulders, so it's okay. So here's what it says. Ve'omer ha-melech l'chachamim yodei ha'itim. Okay, and the king said to his wise men, who knew the times, ki kein devar ha-melech, because this is, sorry, let me just get my glasses for a moment, ki kein devar, yeah, all right, ki kein devar ha-melech, because this was the way which the king acted, lifnei kol yodea dat vedin, to present something of questionable, you know, status before those who knew the law and the judgment. Now, I have to tell you something. When I read this today, I'm thinking, Bill Clinton. Okay, because...
Touché.
Why? Because, well, how's the classic joke go about Bill Clinton? Okay, someone says, Mr. President, what's your position on? Mm-hmm. He goes, hold on a minute. Takes people aside and goes, what do we feel about this? Then he comes back and he says, this is what we feel about it. In other words, Ahasuerus didn't make anything that was substantive his own decision. Okay? He always presented it. He didn't sit there, I have a view. But basically he said, what do I think? Now, here's my chiddush. You ready for this? Were these real chachamim?
No.
Okay? And I'm going to tell you why they weren't. Because they were only yodei ha'itim. They were only people that knew that which was transient and ever changing. They had no values. Everything was relative. everything was permissible. They had nothing that, in a sense, was an absolute. They only knew what was going on at that moment. So they had no vision. They had no values. Without vision, without values, and in a totally hedonistic society, what's the next step? Genocide. What happens in the Weimar Republic, the Republic in Germany right after World War I? It becomes a wild Roman-like behavior. Anything goes. Everything goes.
The guard was let down. It happened in Persia, and it happened in Germany. Their guard was totally let down,
right?
And they let out their real feelings.
Correct. And everything goes. Everything and anything, including leading up to genocide.
Well, I thought
that's a good point. They were like, no inhibitions.
No inhibitions.
I never thought of it that way.
Right. I mean, take, for example, Yimach Shmo Goring, Yimach Shmo, the head of the German Air Force, okay? He was a transvestite, okay? Normally would have been killed for being a transvestite, but Hitler Yimach Shmo needed him. So, okay, yeah, we kill all of the transvestites, but you're a good transvestite, okay? And here he is, the great hero of Germany in World War I in terms of air warfare, and he's now, you know, walking around in baubles and diamonds and coiffed hair, the whole nine yards. Okay? Because everything's permissible and nothing is forbidden. So that's what it means for you, Dei Yitim. There are no values. Without values, everything is relative. Yes, go ahead.
We were saying before that he was such a smart man. He rose from a stable boy to being the king.
Not smart.
It's crafty, yeah. Not smart.
Shrewd.
Shrewd and crafty. Right.
Not smart.
Okay.
He had the emotional intelligence of an ant. He had the shrewdness of the shrewdest businessman imaginable. Okay. Mevina. Okay? That's who he was. And that's what he was. Okay? He was uncouth, slovenly, okay, except when he put on airs, right? And he was the lowest of the low. This is who he was. Okay? And worst of all of that is he was a Rasha Gamur. Okay? Let's go weiter. All right. V'hakarove love. Now we're going to meet new people. People whose names you will never hear at a bris. All right? V'hakarove love. And those who were close to him. Karshna. Okay. Shetar. Admata. Now, you know what Admata sounds like? It sounds like Adama. So this guy was like in the dirt. Tarshish. Meres. Okay. Marsna. Mumuchan. Mumuchan. Who's Mumuchan, guys? Mumuchan, says the Gemara, who Haman.
And he was last
Okay.
Mumuchan.
Huh?
The last one be Haman.
Well, this is Mumuchan.
Right, but in the one before that,
right.
It's Mumuchan.
Well, the reason why is because what Mumuchan does. Mumuchan is going to be the one who gives all the advice, beginning with Pasuk Ted Zion. Okay? And that's why Chazal associate him with Haman. Okay, but that's a good question. These are the Shivat, okay, Sarei Paras Umadai. Notice that he has a consensus. These are the seven brilliant leaders of Persia and Media, okay, Media, right, in ancient world. Roe Pnei HaMelech. These are the ones who saw the face of the king. Hayoshvim Rishona B'malchut. And they sat at the head of the kingdom. Now, we're all young enough to remember what would happen in Russia. And you would have the leader of Russia and the people that would stand closest to him. Okay? You had an entire industry within the intelligence community of ascertaining who was the greatest in favor. And the ones that were closest to Lenin, Stalin, okay, Andropov, okay, and so on and so forth. The ones who were closest to these people, they were considered the ones closest to power. Notice the language that's used here. Look at this, how brilliant it was. It was just given to us, sort of like under the carpet almost, right? These are the ones, Roe Pnei HaMelech, right? And they were Yoshvim Rishona B'Malchut. They were the top of it, okay? Now, all of them are there. And what did they do? Kedat ma la'asot b'malka Vashti. What would they do with the queen Vashti? What would they do with her? And they're all busy figuring it out. Right? What do we do? Okay. What was her terrible, terrible crime? Ala sher lo asta et Ma'amar HaMelech HaChashverosh. Because what? She refused to do what the king said. Okay?
So
Biyad
HaSaransim.
So right. She shamed him. Okay? And if, again, if you're the kind of guy that you all ran away from, okay? You know the kind of guy I'm talking about. It's a pleasure for you to have met me. Okay? That kind of guy. And everything else that's associated with that, okay? If you were that kind of guy, and you have an ego a little, you know, a little thinner than that of a chicken's egg shell, right? So of course you're going to be furious and upset. And again, here you have that expression. Remember before we had Biyad HaSarisim? Right? Biyad HaSarisim? Sarisim? You have it again. So he refused, she refused to do what the king had commanded. Okay, so basically, what do we have? We have the stage set for the end of Vashti, okay, and the speaker who's going to deliver he'll be the judge, jury, and give the verdict is going to be none other than Memuchan, and the king's going to sit there basically, and here's where many people get the misimpression that the king was a fool. I mean, he wasn't highly intelligent, but he was shrewd. But he just sits there and goes, that's a good idea. That's a good idea. And after all, you know, there seems to be something there between them. Oh, he's done Achashverosh's part, even if it's only power. But yet, because he doesn't want to appear weak, he agrees to Memuchan's suggestion. And what happens, of course, to Vashti?
Off with her head.
Right, and we're going to see even how that was done, because in the Medrash, you like the Medrash, in the Medrash they talk about the exact kind of way that she was killed. And we're going to leave that next week. I want to leave on a happy note. Remember, I don't want to leave you with the words how she was killed. Well, all right, just remember, all of this takes place for one reason and one reason only.
You asked her to be the queen.
What?
You asked her to be the queen.
Exactly, which ultimately brings about the temporary geula of Klal Yisrael. And with that, we will stop for tonight.